Welcome to this Tuesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. I'll have a check-in of regional and national news coming up in today's show, and we'll have some feature reports as well, including one from Taylor Chalstrom. Stay tuned as the show kicks off right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian Solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In regional agricultural news, WorldFIRA, the leading event in agrobotics, will launch FIRA USA in Fresno October 18th through the 20th to provide autonomous systems and robots to California and North America growers. Jointly organized by the Global Organization for Agricultural Robotics, the University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources, Western Growers Association, and the Fresno Merced Future of Food Initiative, FIRA USA 2022 will bring together specialty crop growers, robot manufacturers, industries, academics, technologists, startups, and investors for 3 days of problem solving, decision making, and planning. Specialty crops have much to gain from agrobotics and automation. Specialty crops, which the Department of Agriculture defines as fruits and vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruits, and horticulture and nursery crops, including floriculture, tend to be more labor-intensive to produce and pick and require more sophisticated technology solutions. Walt Duflock, Western Grower Vice President of Innovation, is working to advance the pace of innovation in this sector through the Global Harvest Automation Initiative, which will be presented at FIRA USA 2022. One of the initiative's goals is to automate 50% of specialty crop harvest in the next 10 years. The event site is significant for a number of reasons. Fresno is part of California's fertile San Joaquin Valley, a hub for specialty crop growers. The Golden State also provides a prime location for companies interested in tapping into highly profitable agriculture market. One that produces more than 400 commodities and two-thirds of the total fruits and tree crops in the United States. California farmers and ranchers earned $49.1 billion in cash receipts for their output in 2020 alone. To help ensure the success of this first-time event, FIRA has partnered with Gabrielle Yutzi, Chief Innovation Officer at the University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources. To keep the event focused on actionable outcomes, FIRA USA is structured to maximize opportunities for networking, learning, and collaboration. Each of the 3 days has a theme: research and development, technology and business day, and demonstration. October 18th is the research and development day. October 19th is the technology and business day. And on the 20th, it is the demo day. For more information about this upcoming event, log on to FIRA-AgTech.com, and it's spelled F-I-R-A. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture National Agricultural Statistics Service Pacific Region Crop Production Report, California had 49,000 boxes of oranges produced in 2020 to 2021. That amounts to 1,960 tons. For 2021 to 2022, there were 51,300 total boxes of oranges produced, and that comes out to 2,052 tons. And that comes out to 2,052 tons. For grapefruit, in 2020 to 2021, there were 4,200 boxes produced. That amounts to 168 tons. For the 2021 to 2022 year, that is 4,100 boxes that were produced of grapefruit at 164 tons. Tangerines and mandarins in California came out to 28,800 boxes that were produced in 2020 to 2021, and that comes out to 1,152 tons. For 2021 to 2022, it was 21,000 boxes of tangerines and mandarins, and it came out to 840 tons. For lemons in California, 2020 to 2021, it was at 20,100 boxes. That amounts to 804 tons. And for 2021 to 2022, it was 23,000 boxes of lemons coming out to 920 tons. Zoom, the sustainability solutions company creating economically viable substitutes for single-use plastics, has announced it's furthering its partnership with Solenis, a leading global producer of specialty chemicals. Together, the companies are launching a comprehensive line of PFAS-free packaging to replace plastic and styrofoam with a sustainable alternative for food service applications. Popular for their grease and water resistance properties, PFAS are widely used chemicals commonly found in food packaging. While molded fiber packaging can be composted, PFAS do not degrade naturally and can leach from containers and move through soils, contaminating drinking water sources significantly, damaging the sustainability and circular profile of molded fibers. The joint partnership furthers efforts from Zoom and Solenis to expand PFAS-free molded fiber solutions to replace entire categories of single-use plastic without harmful chemicals. Zoom will provide its advanced molded fiber manufacturing capabilities and professional services, while Solenis will supply its unparalleled expertise in functional additives and surface coatings, which increase the strength and functionality of Zoom's fiber recipes. The companies have outlined a technology roadmap of solutions they will collaborate on, including bowls, plates, premium egg cartons, coffee cup lids, protein trays, and yogurt cups. Zoom and Solenis aim to help global food brands replace their plastic and foam packaging with a sustainable and cost-effective alternative. The announcement builds on other breakthrough work from Zoom and Solenis, which brought the packaging community together to accelerate the removal of PFAS with the world's first open-source guide to PFAS-free packaging for global food manufacturers and CPG brands. Wakefern Food Corporation, the largest retailer-owned cooperative in the U.S., has announced a pilot with Symbii to deploy the retail technology company's business intelligence solution, Tally, at stores throughout the trading area. Tally autonomously roams store aisles up to 3 times a day, leveraging computer vision technology to collect highly acute shelf data that ensures products are in stock in the correct location and accurately priced on the sales floor. Tally's AI-powered platform is the retail industry's leading solution for in-store data and inventory sites. It does not require any infrastructure changes to the store environment to operate effectively and is designed to operate during normal store hours collaboratively with store teams and safely alongside shoppers. The robot is equipped with a sheath of sensors that enable it to strategically navigate quietly and autonomously across the store without being obtrusive to customers or store teams. Tally's data gathering technology also frees up time for store associates to work more closely with customers. USDA's latest look at orange production reveals more oranges than expected compared to the previous month, yet a decrease in a major production state. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
A rise reported in U.S. orange crop production by less than 1% per USDA's latest crop production forecast. The main factor was an 8% increase in California's all-orange crop year-over-year by over 51 million boxes, as well as
California's non-Valencias went from 39 million to 43 million
from the previous year. Mark Hudson of the National Agricultural Statistics Service says that offset revised numbers down for Florida's crop.
For Valencia, we were down 3 million boxes. We went from 23 million in March to 20 million in April,
contributing to a month-over-month decrease of 7% in Florida's all-orange production.
A lot of it is due to the drop. It went up 5 percentage points to 51% from previous month, and also took two more pieces of fruit to fill a 90-pound box of oranges.
With Hudson noting, this is the largest drop percentage for Florida Valencia oranges in a non-hurricane year. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Developing a sustainability program that includes verifiable assurance standards has never been more critical for those involved in the ag industry. Producers are continuing to field an increasing number of questions from consumers and customers about how their product is grown and processed, proving a need for transparency. The U.S. pecan industry has been in the process of developing a voluntary quality assurance program, or QAP, through the American Pecan Council in order to address some of these concerns, such as increasing government regulations, changing consumer and buyer preferences, and various food safety considerations, according to American Pecan Council's Alex Ott. Ott says it's more critical now than ever to address these.
I would say, first of all, the assurance quality program, or the quality assurance program, what we're looking at doing is starting to showcase activities that we're already doing and trying to let the consumers out there know that, growers in the pecan world are already doing best practices. And what we'd like to do is show them, what some of those practices are, everything from sustainability to, environmental practices, food safety and quality practices. We all know that consumers want to purchase a product that isn't just of high quality, but is also grown responsibly. And so being a native nut here in the United States, long before the United States was even the United States, Native Americans utilized the pecan. And so to tell the story of the native pecan, the native nut, coupled with the activities that we're doing, I think is a really nice complement for the industry and their story.
QCO ISIM senior accountant Lisa Becker, whose company has been working with the American Pecan Council on the quality assurance program, noted how a program like this can provide transparency to pecan buyers. At the end of the day, a quality assurance program will tell a story to the consumer that they want to hear.
Really, what we're seeing across all the food and ag industries is an increased desire for more transparency across the supply chain, because by the time a product gets in the consumer's hands, there's a lot of different hands that have gone into getting that product to the consumer. And so with that, there can often be a disconnect as far as the practices happening at the grower level and even at the processing level. So what a program like this does is really help to communicate to the consumer and to downstream customers what the industry is doing around environmental stewardship, social responsibility, food safety and quality, and really all the practices that go into making sure that the product is grown responsibly and safely. So what the program does is really list out some key objectives that the industry has in terms of those key areas and the practices associated with those. And given the diversity of the U.S. pecan industry, having so many different growing regions grown across 15 different states, there's lots of considerations in terms of what environmental stewardship looks like for the industry, or even what food safety looks like, depending on where you're growing and what part of the supply chain that you're in. So this program really provides flexibility for growers and processors, handlers to be flexible in how they approach these and looking at what is going to be most impactful and most valuable in terms of taking care of their land and other aspects of environmental and social stewardship, and gives them the flexibility to do so in the way that makes the most sense for their operation, while also communicating at the outcomes level what's of interest to customers and consumers at large.
Quality assurance programs have been around for some time now, and they can have benefits for both the consumers and the grower.
On the customer side, we're seeing a lot of companies wanting to make claims at the product level, and for retailers to make claims about the product that they have in their stores. And so having a program like this gives customers and retailers the information that they need to understand that these products are being grown and processed responsibly and also safely. So it comes down to really their corporate values or their objectives. For instance, we're seeing a lot of targets set around greenhouse gas emissions reductions, science-based targets, and other objectives around both environmental stewardship and social responsibility. So being able to have a program like this that helps them to feel comfortable with what they're purchasing and rolling it into their own objectives is a piece. From the grower and handler side, really what the benefit is there is being able to communicate all of the practices that are already happening in the industry, as Alex had mentioned. And so It is really a powerful tool to be able to get that information all the way down the supply chain.
And just to add on, I mean, what we're seeing also in the consumer studies is that consumers have a lot of confidence when these programs are implemented and there's that third independent party verification that's there. And so one industry can claim what they're doing, but then to have someone come in outside of the industry and review those practices and say, yep, they're doing exactly what they were stating, that gives the assurance, the stamp of approval, if you will, saying that, you know, the transparency is there. And consumers have said that, you know, based on the data that's coming in, if you have a program like this, they're willing to pay more for a product as well as purchase that product, provided that they can see the benefit, not just on the health side of the nut, but also what the industry is doing to have that sustainable impact across generations.
The quality assurance program is structured as a process-based standard that is relevant to the operational context of growers, accumulators, and shellers across the 15 United States pecan growing states. The program development process is broken up in 6 phases, with phases 1 and 2 of the program having been completed. With the completion of these phases, APC is now moving into the last 4 phases of the project. With the completion of these phases, APC is now moving into phases 3 through 6 of the project.
It has been a long time in the making, over 2 years so far, to get to the point of where we are. To Lisa's point, 15 different states, multiple different opinions and personalities within each one of those states to come up with something that we can all, join together and support. And so we've gone through the critical stage of putting this together. Now we're going to go back out to the industry for some more fine tuning and public comment, and then actually, do some test projects here to see how it's going to work and where it lies, and take it to the next step. And that is, once we get some more feedback from that, we'll be able to start wrapping up and implementing this sooner.
So over the next month, we'll begin a public comment period where industry members and any other stakeholders can do a survey to provide feedback on various aspects of the program. So that includes anything that's language related or content related. We welcome all feedback across the industry and even more broadly to make sure that this program is as impactful as possible, as relevant as possible, and that we're considering all the various opinions within and outside of the industry and making sure that this is a really strong and resilient program. It is a living program, so there will always be adjustments here and there as customer priorities change, industry priorities change. This program was intentionally built to be able to implement and incorporate those as needed. So we'll move into that public comment period, make those additional changes to the program, and then we'll be doing some on-site tests of the program where we will have kind of a mock verification and have someone kind of walking through the program with growers and handlers to make sure that as you're moving through it from a verification standpoint, it all makes sense and we can really test the various aspects of the program then. And then we'll be looking at really rolling it out largely across the industry and to customers.
For questions, concerns, or to make public comments on the quality assurance program, go to AmericanPecan.com. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In national agricultural news, supply chain disruptions have become a widely discussed issue among all aspects of agricultural production. Farm News reporter Michael Clements shares more on how even railway operations are feeling the crunch.
Railways are a vital piece of the supply chain and are usually a cost-effective and reliable way to get agricultural goods to their destination. However, supply chain issues have led to an increase in unfilled railcar orders and the cost of railway shipping, according to American Farm Bureau Federation economist Danny Munch.
Unfilled orders refer to the number of railcars a buyer, like a grain elevator, ordered but did not receive. When a service contract between a shipper and a railway is not filled, shippers might look elsewhere to purchase railcar access. That often occurs in the secondary railcar market, where shippers bid against other shippers for their contracts. Because there are so many unfilled orders, the demand in the secondary market has jumped up quite a bit.
Munch says it's part of the overall issue of supply chain disruptions.
So many of the issues we've been hearing about in trucking and ocean freight also contribute to these rail service disruptions. There's a significant shortage in rail crew labor, which is expected to be the largest contributor. During COVID-19, railways also sold off a lot of rail cars and other assets during that time of heavy uncertainty. So now they're facing rail car inventory shortages. And then more broadly, you're seeing lockdowns across ports in China in response to their COVID issues, tying up a huge portion of containers that could be used intermodally in our own domestic rail networks.
Munch says unfilled and delayed orders means a disruption of the delivery of agricultural products.
For example, milling operations reliant on the delivery of grain from elevators are forced to halt their operations, putting the flow of feed to livestock operations at risk. Beyond creative solutions to immediately get rid of some congestion issues, long-term investments in on-farm storage and on-operation storage to improve grain storage could help hedge against transportation disruptions, but in any case, improvements are needed soon to prevent further disruptions to the farm economy.
Learn more at fb.org/market-intel. Michael Clements, Washington.
The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says its food price index set a record in March. The index averaged 159.3 points, up almost 18 points from February. The 12% jump in the index during March sent it to the highest level since the index began in 1990. The latest increase reflects all-time highs for vegetable oils, cereals, and meat sub-indices, while sugar and dairy products also rose significantly. The cereal price index averaged 170 points in March, up 25 points from February. The 17% increase reflected a surge in world wheat and coarse grain prices, largely caused by export disruptions from Ukraine. The vegetable oil price index averaged 248 points in March, up 47 points from February. The dairy price index averaged 145.2 points in March, up almost 4 points, and the seventh consecutive monthly increase. The meat price index rose by 5.5 points, and the sugar price index was 7.4 points higher. A Chinese national formerly residing in Missouri was sentenced to 29 months in prison and a $150,000 fine for conspiring to commit economic espionage. Xiang Heixiao pled guilty to the charge in January. Court documents say that Xiang conspired to steal a trade secret from the Climate Corporation, a subsidiary of Monsanto, to benefit a foreign government. Xiang conspired to steal an important trade secret to gain an unfair advantage for himself and the Chinese government, according to Assistant Attorney General Matthew Olson of the Justice Department's National Security Division. The victim companies invested significant time and resources to develop this intellectual property. Olson says espionage is a serious offense that can threaten U.S. companies' competitive advantage. After leaving Monsanto, Xiang attempted to take Monsanto's computer algorithm called the Nutrient Optimizer on an electronic device back to China. He was arrested and returned to the U.S. in November of 2019. USA Chief Economist Seth Meyer gives examples of how the Russian invasion of Ukraine is having an effect on the latest global supply and demand estimates for particular commodities.
We continue to make some adjustments relative to the war in Ukraine and changes in our expectations about what Ukraine and Russia will ship as a result of the war. So we did have some changes from Ukraine in terms of cutting supplies of wheat being exported from Ukraine, some offsets from Russia. That export total increased a little bit. I think you see it more clearly over on the corn balance sheet at a global level, where we cut substantially by more than 4 million metric tons exports out of the Ukraine, simply because the logistical ability to move it isn't there. They cannot ship out of their ports, which is the primary exit point for corn in Ukraine, and instead it's having to be trained to the West. And then that spills over into other parts of the balance sheet as well. You notice Chinese imports of corn down 3 million metric tons, and that being the case of China using Ukraine as a source for trade, and that's simply not available at the moment.
That was today's national news. Here's our second segment of the day.
Are you a small business or a member of the export market that is looking for a training course to learn the ins and outs of exporting? Or are you a long-term member of the market that is looking for a refresher course on the ever-changing rules and regulations happening within exporting? CalAgX, a comprehensive export training course for California food and agriculture, is the place to visit to address all those needs and more. Frank Nunez, the District Director of Trade and Training at State Center Community College District and a member of the production team for CalAgX, considers the sole goal of the program to be to increase California exports and bring in new players to the game.
For these programs, we generally target the people that have no export experience or have minimal export experience, but a lot of big companies, we've had people from like Blue Diamond, like Morningstar, you name it. What they do is they send a lot of their new employees through the CalAgX training. They're confident in the program. They know what they're going to get out of it. So that's why they continue to send new employees here, because it kind of gives them that quick leg up where they understand the export process and how to do it now, so that they don't have to do that initial training. Then they can just focus specifically on their industry when they train people. So it's been great.
Nunez discusses how the program has recently made a new shift. In 2006, there was a program established whose sole responsibility was to ensure the success of California businesses in the export market. The Export Readiness Training Program consisted of a one-week course where instructors traveled across the state each week and lectured for 4 hours at a time. With the onset of new funding and COVID-19, the program has made adjustments to the course, including creating a 10-part series that takes place on Thursdays from 9 to 11 a.m., reducing the amount of lecture time from 4 to 2 hours, and moving the program to be solely on Zoom. The program has also been rebranded as CalAgX.
Well, when it comes to COVID now, it's hard to do trade missions. I mean, we're kind of getting at the tail end of the COVID side of it now, but before, most countries, I mean, it banned, you couldn't travel to those countries. If you did, you had to do like a 2 weeks quarantine before you could even do anything. So it's just not economically feasible to do that. And so that's when we started doing your digital trade missions, where we did like a trade mission where we had buyers, we matched them up with California suppliers, and we did it over Zoom. We scheduled meetings. And so our training activities kind of evolved the same way. So instead of us traveling all over the state, now we're doing the same thing where we're doing our training over Zoom. So it has actually helped us. We get more people involved, and it's a lot easier for people that maybe they live up in the Yuba or down in like the desert area by Coachella, where they couldn't come to these kind of training programs before. Now it's access to everybody.
The 10 modules that are covered by experts in the industry are exporting California food and agriculture in an evolving world, transportation and logistics, export documentation process, export and foreign import regulations and legal aspects, labeling, packaging, and food additives, banking insurance and getting paid, export assistant providers, finding the right market through research, developing an export plan, pricing and finding buyers, and the art of negotiation in a cross-cultural setting. Nunez explains what might be covered in a final module.
What we do is we teach you how to look up the different cultures, because everybody has different business practices around the world. So you don't want to go in, like, let's say you go to Japan, and if a Japanese seller gives you his business card, you're not going to go, oh, okay, and start writing some information on the back of his card. I mean, to them, the business card, they consider it like their face. So if you wrote on their card, they would be offended thinking that you're writing on their face. So there's different things from around the world. Some people, they hug a lot. Most Americans, I mean, we kind of like, we're a little standoffish on that. We're not as comfortable. And you've been to some countries where they're walking with you and they start holding your hand.
On top of receiving a well-rounded overview of what to expect when diving into exporting, CalAgX provides many small companies the opportunity to attend export training activities.
Like next year, we'll be going to Gulf Foods, and we'll bring in buyers from other countries. or we go to other trade shows. And what we do is we use different grant funds or different funding that we're able to get. And we get the small companies that have very little export experience. Mostly those, we target the ones that come through the CalAgX program because now they got their first step into opening a new world for them. And so we bring them to join us on these trade shows. So we might get like two or three booths. We kind of group them together. We call it like a mini California pavilion. And so this way, it's a shared booth between maybe anywhere from 6 to 10 companies that otherwise wouldn't be going to these different type of trade shows because they don't have the experience or they don't have the the money to put out for some of these trade shows. So what we do is they go in there, they have their products, and then we sit there, we set up some meetings for them. We teach them how to exhibit at a trade show, kind of how to put their best foot forward, what type of products that they should bring and stuff like that.
Nunez believes activities allow for the final string to be pulled to bring it all together and allow the businesses to be set up for success. If you are interested in learning more about CalAgX or want to register for the upcoming course from May 12th to June 14th, please refer to www.calagx.net. This is where you will find the qualifications to participate, the program overview, and any other information that you might want to know about the program. Also, if you decide to register, use promo code MyAgLife to receive 25% off on registration. This is Sierra Polhemus with My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.